What do the Islanders do? I mean, that's up for discussion. I think the Calgary Flames are one of the teams that's been interested. I think a number of others have been poking around of late to try and figure out what's going on with Kadri.
Still some speculation. Frank Saravalli wondering what exactly is happening with Nazem Kadri. Maybe it isn't all wrapped up, signed, sealed, and delivered that he's ending up with Lou Lamoriello and the New York Islanders. We'll see. Still the biggest free agent name out there. It's kind of surprising. We are almost a full month beyond free agency opening, and Nazem Kadri is still unsigned.
Definitely not what I would have predicted.
Yeah.
Not where I saw this going. Pre-free agency.
It almost feels as though there is no chance he gets a massive contract, but we'll see how it plays out.
It does feel typically when you're on the market this long, it means it's because nobody knocked your socks off, right?
Yeah.
Nobody gave you that proverbial offer you couldn't refuse, so it's not going to be necessarily as big as maybe the player and we expected, but I mean, who knows? If there's still some interest, still multiple teams into it, you never know where it could go.
Alfred and Bruff, hour three of the program, Camp and Pound, is your sponsor for the third hour of the program. Campbell and Pound, real estate appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell and Pound. Visit campbell-pound.com today. And, of course, the official sponsor of Halford and Bruff in the morning is the Dulari family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dulari difference today. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Joe Yearden, the noted Substack and now writing NHL contributor at Bleacher Report. Thanks for this, Joe. How's it going?
It's going well, guys. Good to talk to you this morning.
Yeah, good to have you on. So have you figured out what's going on with Nazem Kadri? Is he going to come out of hiding at some point?
Well, the thing about Kadri I've been wondering about is the main rumor has been that the Islanders were the key team interested, right?
Yeah.
And I keep wondering if maybe Lou's got him under wraps somewhere, you know, buried somewhere in Long Island saying, like, all right, listen, we'll announce this when we're good and ready. Because isn't that what they did with Chara and Parise last year? Like they didn't officially announce those signings until, you know, the end of August, beginning of September, I think. So yeah, I wonder if that's what's happened with Kadri, because the Islanders have done nothing, at least nothing of note, anyhow. But yeah, that's the only conspiracy theory I'm running with Kadri, is that he's already been signed. He's been signed by the Islanders for a month now.
And, they've got Noah Dobson and Alex Romanov. All the speculation from Islanders writers, too, there is that those contracts are already done, but just waiting on Lou to actually file them before it actually happens, which is also pretty funny on that front. So was interested in your article over at Bleacher Report talking about some of the worst moves of last offseason, of the last 12 months in the NHL, and you know, there's quite a few to choose from. You didn't have the Canucks on your list and their decision to trade for Connor Garland and Oliver Ekman-Larsson, which, hey, Joe, you just won some cred with Canucks fans. I'll give you that much. But it kind of speaks to just how GMs around the league find a way to get themselves in some really ugly situations.
Well, I'll be honest. That one caught my eye. And I was kicking around the thought of maybe throwing it on there, but I don't know, giving up Jay Beagle and all them, I think it kind of evened itself out because it's not like it really worked out that great for Arizona either. So I'm, you know, I think when it's mutually not all that beneficial, I think it's okay. Listen, Garland worked out pretty good, I thought, because he's a pretty good player, but I certainly understand getting a little upset about the Ekman-Larsson contract and how much of a bear that's a bit to try to handle, but yeah, it's, you know, I don't know. There's so many weird choices, weird, you know, crazy ideas that GMs come up with, and those were the main ones that really jumped out at me. But it's I don't know, man. Like there's so many examples where you could point at and say, like, why is this guy still a GM? You know, after making a move like this, or you know, how does this escape criticism? Because it's just listen, hindsight's the greatest thing ever, because we can all sound like the smartest people on earth saying, boy, that was really dumb in the moment, but you know, it's crazy.
Well, you know, a lot of or some of the decisions on your list, Joe, they were things that even in the moment, there were plenty of people to point out, and they seemed like pretty obvious mistakes, right? I'm looking at, you know, the Blackhawks trading for Seth Jones, the Rasmus Ristolainen acquisition and extension for the Philadelphia Flyers, and we can get into some of those, you know, but I wanted to ask you about maybe one of the surprising entries, which was the New York Rangers not beefing up their blue line at the trade deadline, because they were very active at the deadline and, you know, didn't materialize with a JT Miller trade like we here in Vancouver thought it might, but they had Tyler Motte and Andrew Kopp. But what stood out to you, or why, what was it about their decision not to add on the blue line that kind of got them onto your biggest mistakes list?
Well, the thing about it, you know, and I love the additions of Kopp and Motte because it helped make them a little bit tougher up front. And let's face it, the Rangers needed like a whole, you know, team-wide sort of defensive improvement on their game, just because, you know, what we saw with Shesterkin last year was pretty similar to Dominic Hasek back, you know, in the Buffalo days, where it was kind of like, all right, man, it's on you, dude. You gotta win it for us. But you know, you look up and down the blue line for the Rangers, and it's pretty top heavy. You know, Adam Fox is brilliant. Keandre Miller had a fantastic season last year, and you know, Jacob Trouba was doing his best Ulf Samuelson impressions last year, I think. So that was a bit distracting. And Ryan Lindgren's a nice piece, but they were very thin, you know. And if they lose one of those guys, they're in big trouble. So you know, they had very little depth, you know. And I know they're excited about Schneider, you know, one of their really young guys. I think he's probably gonna be penciling in their top six this year, but you know, they were a team that was, you know, top, you know, one of the top teams in the East, top four in the East. And when you're a top four team in the East and you have the best goalie in the league by far, man, oh man, do anything you can to try to solidify how good you can be, because you can go far with that kind of guy. I mean, geez, they made it to game six of the Eastern Conference Finals, which is, you know, I think probably gets me a little bit of heat for saying that it was a big mistake, but they added nobody on the back line, and we saw in the playoffs that they were still getting their doors blown off with shots, chances, everything that they were giving up. Pretty fortunate to get past Pittsburgh in the first round. You know, they had their hands full of Carolina, and obviously Tampa takes them out. But, you know, that was something where if you add another stronger piece on the back end, you know, Justin Braun, listen, he did okay, I guess, but that's not the guy that's going to really move, you know, is going to move planets for you. Like that's just not going to happen. So that was a big letdown, because I mean, listen, there's going to be a lot of tension on the Rangers period because it's New York, but geez, man, like that it was such an obvious need that they just completely gloss over and said, you know what, forget it. We got other things. Maybe we can outscore people.
The other interesting move on your list is Jack Eichel to the Vegas Golden Knights. And, I don't know if I certainly didn't expect Vegas to miss the playoffs after they made that trade. Eichel did play a good chunk of games there through the back end of the season, but obviously wasn't at his peak of powers that we saw earlier in his career in Buffalo yet. But it's not really about the Eichel trade in a vacuum. It's about how George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon have run that team and always pushing for the biggest asset out there. And it's really affecting how they've been able to build that team and how, you know, even this offseason, we've seen them have to get rid of Max Pacioretty for nothing. And they're still $5 million over the salary cap.
Yeah, that was the Eichel move in itself. You know, just a couple of months, sure seemed like it was like, uh-oh, maybe this was a bit too much by Vegas to give away, but it is. It's the accumulation of moves over basically since the get-go. You know, you look back at, you know, different trades they made, like the Tomas Tatar trade, you know, where they give up, you know, a first, a second, and a third round pick for Tatar, and he was in Vegas for what, maybe a season, maybe two, you know, and then they give up Suzuki as part of that deal. Like that's a pretty big oops as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, it's giving away Pacioretty for free. It's giving, you know, it's giving Tuck and Krebs and a first round pick to Buffalo for Eichel. It's all of these moves that when you throw them all together, it's, you know, for an expansion franchise, throwing away futures and throwing away all kinds of stuff like that is wild, because you got to build stuff up. Like, you know, I know a lot of people were dunking on Seattle for you know, passing over all kinds of super, you know, superstar players, you know, not taking Tarasenko, all these guys, where it was, you know, people were saying like, man, they could do it like Vegas. And it's like, well, maybe they're taking the more traditional expansion approach. You know, maybe you kind of eat crap the first year, but you build up your profile, you build up your prospects, and, you know, suddenly Shane Wright falls into your lap, and, you know, you got Matty Beniers coming out, you know, coming out of Michigan, and things are looking up pretty quick. But, you know, I'm based in Buffalo, so people were really excited to see that I cited that move as part of that. And, but it wasn't about Jack in all, it was just everything that Vegas has done where, you know, they've really pushed the limits as far as, you know, saying, we got to win a cup. That's what we're here to do. And we're going to do it, you know, come hell or high water.
There is something admirable about that, right? Going all in, I think, to try to win a Stanley Cup. But I also do wonder if, you know, they're chasing kind of the success of that first season, the inaugural season, but they've also lost the identity of that team in a big way, right? Because that was, you know, the misfits that they assembled through the expansion draft and all the maneuvering around it. And now I look at it and, you know, how it ended with Marc-Andre Fleury. And it just feels like, as you said, as much as you want teams to be chasing the cup every year, this is kind of destined to catch up with them at some point. And it's really cost them a little bit of that identity as well.
Yeah, and we don't see NHL teams really run that way. You know, I mean, listen, if Vegas wants to get some vibes back, Cody Egan's still out there. He's as much of a vibes guy as anybody. But we don't see NHL teams really run this way at all, where it's just, you know, there's no real, like, feeling, there's nothing that really ties them to their guys. Like, you don't look at Vegas and say, boy, I know the Knights because of this player. Like, this guy sticks out to me. There's none of that, really, because I think back to last summer, people were kicking around the idea that maybe they would move Shea Theodore. And it's like, that's crazy to me, because they were, you know, they get him from the Ducks, and that's a huge win. And he turns out to be an outstanding defenseman. And then they're like, well, maybe they move him because they got to get these other guys in there. It's like, man, just settle down a little bit. Like, you got, you know, part of building a team is to have a team together for more than a couple of seasons. They just, I don't know, the ownership in Vegas is very cutthroat, which, again, I understand. Vegas is a cutthroat town with entertainment, but man, you know, it's very NBA-ish how they just move guys in and out and trying to get right to the top.
And they've definitely upset some of their players in doing so. Chicago's on your list as well, and Seth Jones trade, ugly, right? It's the worst kind of move to make. You trade a lottery pick for a player, and well, now that player signed for a long term, and they've now started a heavy rebuild. They've been aggressive about their rebuild, and even this offseason, Joe, like, we look at what Chicago has done, just aggressively committing to being very bad at hockey, but also in doing so, trading some young players while doing it, and Alex DeBrincat and Kirby Doc. Have you liked what Chicago has done this offseason in comparison to last?
Yeah, I like that they've embraced that they're going to be bad. You know, the only thing I don't get is that Taves and Kane still are there, A, there, and B, might still be there for most of the season. Like, that's crazy to me, because I can't imagine those guys are going to love, you know, being the old guys around a team that's rebuilding with a bunch of super young dudes, you know, coming up around them. That blows my mind. But, you look at what Stan Bowman was doing last year, where he's still got a handful of guys, and he's just like, no, as long as we have these guys, we have to try to keep the ship moving around them. You know, trading for Fleury, doing all these things where you're just kind of like, what are you doing, guys? Like, are you in or are you out? Like, what's happening here? And, you know, you make that move for Jones, and it's like, well, you just gave away a ton of futures for a guy who's, I mean, if you break down his deeper numbers, might not be the kind of guy you want to be dumping those kinds of futures into. But, you know, fortunately for them, Jones had a pretty decent season. I mean, Chicago is bad, but Jones played pretty well. But man, it's wild that Bowman was doing a lot of those moves that he's doing, because it seemed the second that Bowman was out, which, you know, again, wasn't exactly the circumstances they were hoping, forgive the sirens, guys. I live near a firehouse. those weren't the moves they were hoping to be making to try to make things work out. But, you know, Kyle Davidson's done, I think he's done a better job of bringing some reality to everybody's eyes there and saying, listen, we got to get this figured out. We're rebuilding. Like, let's make no mistake about this. And listen, if you get really bad this year and wind up with the number one pick in 2023, boy, it seems like that's going to work out really well in your favor.
So your piece, Joe, is looking at the worst decisions from last NHL season. I don't know if you're already kind of prepping for a similar piece come next year, but are there any moves from this offseason that kind of jumped out to you as, oh, you know, that could be a potential entry on this list next year?
I'm not really a snap judgment kind of guy. Nothing's really jumped out at me, although I don't like picking on the Philadelphia Flyers too much because I enjoy the Flyers. The Flyers are entertaining, and maybe
they give us things to talk about. That's for sure, right, Joe?
Right. You know, maybe it's the kind of entertaining where it's like, boy, they're a mess. You know, it's that celebrity that's just, you know, kind of doing dumb things all the time in public where you're like, boy, I feel bad for him, but boy, this is great content. I love this.
Yeah.
So I love John Tortorella. I think he's, I know you guys probably don't love him as much out there, but, as a human being, he's a super guy. I love him. I don't know what he's doing going to the Flyers. Like, that seems like a very bad situation to be walking into. Now, I mean, who knows? Maybe his strict ways will get them snapped around and everybody will come together and Carter Hart will become Superman in net. But I don't know. There's so many things that they do where it just leaves me scratching my head. And I don't know if it's the combo of it being the Flyers and Chuck Fletcher, or if it's just Chuck Fletcher doing it, or it's just the whole aura around the Flyers where it just immediately grabs my attention to say, like, okay, what moves are they doing and why is it going to end up really bad?
Hey, Joe, we really appreciate the time this morning. Thanks for this.
Hey, thanks, guys. Really good to talk to you.
There is Joe Yeardon covering the NHL at Bleacher Report. And an interesting take there. You know, the Flyers, certainly when they had the chance to get Johnny Gaudreau and instead signed Anthony DeAngelo and didn't have the cap space available to go after Johnny Gaudreau, like, that looks like
that's brutal.
All-time bad move.
That is just so many things lining up with Johnny Gaudreau. Yeah. He wants to leave. He's available. Incredible player. Obviously from the region, all of that. And who knows? Maybe it was too close to home for him. And the fact that you weren't even in the running because of these ill-considered other moves that you made.
Yeah.
And not only that, and you had to buy out Oscar Lindblom, right? And you look at that and you say, okay, well, that's the kind of move that you make to put yourself in the running for Johnny Gaudreau. And no, it was just to do a bunch of other things. That is just an incredibly hard situation to swallow if you're a Flyers fan.
It's really the blueprint for a bad move in the NHL, Jamie, is generally around the idea of you don't have a really good sense of what you actually are as a hockey
player. And typically, most often, it's you think you're better than you are. That's when you get into the worst mistakes.
That's
right?
Philadelphia right now. That's what Chicago was last year. A lot of the Canucks moves, you know, like, we're right there. We just got to... We'll give the Sedins another chance. Let's just keep pushing. Let's go sign Louis Erickson.
Just got to sign Jay Beagle.
Yeah. You know, and you know, that really is the framework for a lot of the bad decisions that get made in the NHL is we should be rebuilding, but we're not yet ready to take a step back.
Yeah, we're not ready to stomach that yet.
Yeah.
So we're going to extend Rasmus Ristolainen instead.
The whole thing with the Philadelphia Flyers is quite fascinating. You know, I do, as far as, like, worst moves of the offseason, we did pick on Erik Branson a little bit yesterday. I think one of the more puzzling ones for me is probably Ben Chiarot to the Detroit Red Wings.
Sure.
Like, I like a lot of what the Red Wings did. Maybe it's a little too much money for Andrew Kopp, but... You know what? They had to start getting some better players in there and starting to try and win more hockey games. I get all that. But the Chiarot one, like, Chiarot is kind of the prototype for a guy that gets is more valued than what he actually provides on the ice. And that, I don't know how you could watch him in the playoffs for Florida and still say, yeah, like that's a guy we desperately need and want to give him a multi-year contract for a bunch of money.
Well, he really built his reputation on the Habs run to the Stanley Cup, right? And he's still living off that, despite, as you said, the much more recent evidence from this year where he really, really struggled with Florida, right? And for Detroit, look, I get that they're trying to take that jump up the standings. And, you know, it's always easy to look at it when you're in Detroit's perspective. You're not worried about cap space at all right now, right? But they signed him for 4 years. So you have no idea. That's absolutely a kind of deal that could come back to bite them when, you know, they need to give Moritz Seider a new deal, when they need to give some of their other young players new deals. They might be kicking themselves saying, man, why do we have Ben Chiarot on the books at $4.75 million for another couple of years? Again, I understand you're, okay, hey, we're not just rebuilding now. We're trying to get better. We're trying to add veterans, but I'm not sure how much Ben Chiarot actually moves the needle for you if you're trying to chase down a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, for me, it doesn't really do it. This might come as a surprise, but I think one of the teams that's had one of the better off seasons, sneakily, is the Seattle Kraken. Like, things have really worked out for the Kraken this year, Jamie.
Shane Wright falling into their laps. I mean, that's like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Right. Now you've got Matty Beniers and Shane Wright through the middle of the ice for the next decade plus. Going to be great. Awesome. That kind of luck never really happens to the Canucks, though. Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson falling to the Canucks in the draft has helped them out quite a bit. I love the Oliver Bjorkstrand move. Burakovsky, maybe I have some question marks there, but I just think it was a much better offseason this year than what they did in their opening year.
The one thing I'll say is
not that they're going to be a playoff.
No. I understand. I hear what you're saying. They do have a lot of future money on the books to non-elite players, right?
Yes.
Like Jaden Schwartz, 4 more years. He's already 30 at 5.5. You know, Andrei Burakovsky signs the long-term deal. Oliver Bjorkstrand, 4 more years at $5.4 million. Yanni Gord, 3 more seasons. Jared McCann, right? Like a lot of guys who are, you know, all good players, but do you want to be committed, have that much money committed to that group of players when there's not necessarily a true star in the group? That's what would kind of concern me a little bit. There's a similar thing on the back end with Jamie Oleksiak and Adam Larson. And I think this was always one of my problems with Seattle saying, oh, okay, we're not going to take Vladimir Tarasenko because we want to keep our salary cap sheet clean, right? Well, what do you end up doing then? You feel pressure to go use that cap space, and you end up spending it on free agency, which usually doesn't work out too well for the team doing the spending in free agency. So they have had a nice offseason, but still you look at their future situation, and there's a bunch of deals where, you know, it wouldn't shock me if in 2 or 3 years they're saying, oh, man, can we get this guy off our books? Can we unload this player from our books because all of a sudden we need that salary cap space now?
And they have added a ton of draft picks as well. They had a really, really strong draft, according to a lot of the experts on this past year's NHL entry draft. It's Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd. What we learned is coming up. Get your submissions in, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Want to get to this final text. Table Saw James with the dig of the day. What he should have said is, sorry for the sirens. I live in Buffalo. Poor Buffalo, man.
Poor Buffalo.
That's actually our national anthem. Regional anthem, as it were.
It's one of the things that is universal, I guess.
Dumping on Buffalo?
Because, like, I mean, I would be on Toronto radio in earlier in my career, and hey, guess what? We get to make fun of Buffalo a lot, and everybody gets the reference. One of the things I didn't know would translate so well to Vancouver was just dumping on Buffalo.
There's definitely this universal appeal there, for sure. I will say the people of Buffalo.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, you see the Bills. You see, like, the Bills tailgate parties and stuff. Yeah, they look great. Love the people of Buffalo. Never been, but I can imagine.
I will reserve comment on the city of Buffalo. The people are great.
The slang in Buffalo is great. You don't know nothing about the Bills, you jagoff.
That was pretty good, actually. Yeah, like, that was pretty good. You just transported me there.
I feel like right I'm in there. Buffalo.
Yeah.
It is Halford and Bruff in the morning. Coming up, what we learned. Get your submissions in, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. One final segment here on this Wednesday on Sports at 650. Alfred and Bruff in the morning. Hour three of the program is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit campbell-pound.com today. And, of course, the official automotive sponsor of Alfred and Bruff in the morning is the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. What we learned coming up. Get your submissions in, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. I've got a few. What we learned, there are sour gummy worms in the vending machine here at work. I don't know. It's a weird choice. I've never seen sour gummy worms in the vending machine here.
We have some.
It's a very eclectic vending machine.
Yeah.
Like, it's got all sorts of things in it. Like, do you want to get
Mr. Noodles?
Yeah, do you want to get a Snickers bar and Mr. Noodles, maybe buy a toothbrush at the same time?
We've got some non-traditional options in the vending machine here, for
it's
sure.
It's kind of like the worst thing to have in a radio building, right?
Have you ever
like,
wanted a pair of socks from a vending machine? Because guess what? A3, yeah. $3.
Any person that's speaking for a living would not want sour gummy worms.
Well, I don't know. I could see it. After the show,
want it. Someone behind the scenes could buy it,
I guess.
Well, it's just hosts that work here.
My favorite thing about the sour gummy worms in the vending machine, though, there's a note: they are gluten free.
Yeah.
Case you didn't know already.
Phew.
Case you didn't know already. Thank goodness these.
I'm really watching my gluten, so I'm glad that these sour gummy worms are gluten free.
I don't want to know what a gluten free sour gummy worm tastes like.
I'm definitely going for this instead of the cookie because this one's gluten free.
I think it's just one of those things that they didn't specifically make gluten free. It just happens.
Yeah, I know.
To
it's
be.
Just right, it is a great marketing
like Oreos,
opportunity for us.
I think Oreos are considered vegan.
Yeah,
and it's not because they make them on
no,
purpose
it's just
vegan.
Like that's just how it's made.
Yeah. So let's slap a label on there. That'll sell some more.
It would be like somebody selling salami and be like, "It's keto friendly." Like, of course it is.
Yeah, it's meat.
It's veggie free.
Just meat.
Atkins diet salami. Yeah.
Thanks. What we learned. Jamie.
All right. I got a couple here. I'll start with this one. So what we learned, Mazzy Smith is a freak of nature. Now, you probably don't know that name. I didn't until today. Bruce Feldman up at The Athletic. He does an annual college football freaks list. It goes through the most impressive athletic specimens in college football this year. And number one on his list, this caught my eye, Mazzy Smith, a defensive tackle out of Michigan, 6'3", 337 pounds. Okay, so that big fella, 44-inch vertical.
Wow.
That like a 44-inch vertical, to put that in perspective, that's good if you're like a shooting guard in the NBA.
Yeah.
That's like, wow, that guy can really jump. That guy can get up. He's got hops. He's a 44-inch vertical. This dude is 337 pounds. He's got a vertical almost 4 feet. And then he's all these other numbers, or you know, his broad jump and his bench press and his shuttle time, all of it's off the charts. But that stood out to me. 337 pounds. It's just casual 44-inch vertical. That's unreal. Athletes are high-level athletes. Pretty nuts.
What do you think your vertical would be?
I don't even want to know. I don't even want to know.
I'd be like George Costanza trying to show off the jumping shoes. I'd get like maybe an eighth of an inch off the ground.
I used to read, I played basketball in high school, and I used to read, you know, remember Slam magazine?
Yep.
And in the back of Slam, they would always have ads for like workout equipment that was supposed to like increase your vertical and workout programs. Like, you know, oh, like wear this vest when you jump and then like You had like 5 inches to your vertical.
And ankle,
like,
weights?
I was always, as a teenager, I was like, I don't know. I could see that. Maybe I should do it. Maybe I should do it.
What is it? Just calf raises? Is that how you improve your vertical?
I have absolutely no idea.
Get those twitch muscles going, do some jumps onto a box.
Those leg muscles.
Yeah.
To jump with that much weight behind it, like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's awesome. 300-pounder guy. What's his vertical, Jamie? What'd you say?
44 inches.
That's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. It's completely nuts.
See, like, my worry is if I one final thought before, like, thank you for the mooncat. One final thought, like, if I ever jump from any, like, elevated area, I feel like I'm going to end up like Sid Vicious in a wrestling ring, you know? So that's my worry.
What? There we go. There we go.
Left you hanging there.
You guys got any?
I got a what we learned. What we learned, you guys mentioned the speed of the pitchers in the Mariners and Yankees game.
Yeah.
And how it's a little different than the Jays bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
They throw some hot pitches. In that game, the 1-0 13-inning game, Yankees and Mariners, 8 different pitchers combined to throw 139 pitches at 97 miles an hour or higher. 139 pitches of 97 miles.
That's wild.
That's unbelievable. The back in the day, it used to be incredible when someone got to like 95, 96.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You have like, one guy on your team.
This guy's a flamethrower. Yeah. He's touching 96 today. Yeah.
And there was 8 different pitchers that could reach 97 plus in one game. Why hitting's down.
Yeah. It turns out velocity is king in Major League Baseball.
Not for the Jays.
All right, Mookow,
I got one.
Yep.
Ivan is back playing in the World Juniors. Chechia forward number 16, one of the great hockey names in existence. Ivan. That's his full name. I'm not making this up.
Some controversy over the third Ivan?
What, there's an Ivan controversy?
Well, yeah, there's people like, it's just Ivan. Not Ivan.
It was a typo.
Why is there a third Ivan?
Yeah.
There's actually
middle
four
name
Ivans.
Well?
They spelled it wrong. It's Ivan.
See, you double here. Yeah. Four Ivans.
too many Ivans.
Happy he's back, though.
Are you guys just like, when we're on the air and you guys are off air, is it just like a constant loop of Simpsons references back and forth between you two? Yeah,
to be fair, this is my life in general.
I speak in Simpsons references.
Yeah, my friends and I communicate exclusively via Simpsons references.
Oh, man.
All right, Mookow that. Let's get to some listener submissions for what we learned. 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Table Saw James. Thank you. What am I supposed to call that thing?
The dot matrix.
The dot matrix.
Come on.
Yes. These references are like even old for me. All right. Table Saw James. The Jays really needed it to keep raining in Baltimore last night after Bo was frustratingly swinging away for 2 homers on 2 strike counts.
Yeah, and we got this one from Adam, the former Bath guy. What we learned, I learned the best way to get Bo Bichette going is for you guys to criticize his game. To be fair, we acknowledge that he's a good player. He's just frustrating to watch sometimes. He's a free swinger at the plate. And yesterday it paid off, 2 home runs, 2 big home runs for Bo Bichette.
I just feel like there's kind of a ceiling on Bo Bichette. I also need to remind myself of just how young he still is. He's just 24 years old. But, I mean, look, it is a down year for Bo. Even, like, last year he hit .298, was .301 in his first, in 2020. That was a shorter season, of course. But he's just down at .263 this year. That means his on base is barely over .300.
Yeah.
It hasn't exactly been a banner year for Bo Bichette. Yes, he's still a good young player. Yes, there's still some promise there. But in the overall, he has had a difficult season. And that was, you know, part of my frustration with Bo is his plate discipline is really catching up with him right
and
now.
And you look at it, the concerning part of it is that it's not now his batting average on balls in play, like kind of the luck element. It's a career low, but it's not so incredibly low, right?
Yeah.
It's still a pretty decent number. The concerning thing is his power is down. and his strike percentage, her strikeout rate is way up, right? Yeah. So he's making less contact. Even when he does, he's not hitting it as hard as he did. And so, yeah, his batting average is down as a result. Those are two trends that are not good. Because as you said, you know, he's not a guy who's going to walk a lot, right? He'll go like 2 weeks at a time sometimes without taking a walk. He's a guy who needs to be driving the ball, and he's been swinging and missing too much this year and not hitting with power. When he does, that's concerning. That's concerning. They need him to be the guy he was last season, right? We're hitting almost 300, almost 30 home runs. That's kind of who they need Bo Bichette to be. And if he is that, he's an incredibly valuable player. We just haven't seen that version of him this year.
Continuing with the listener submissions from the humanoids, as I'm supposed to call them. Chris from Nanaimo. What we learned, the new leaked Canucks reverse retro jersey looks like the fake ones you get at Walmart. Terrible.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
Is this the Johnny Canuck
one? The Johnny Canuck one, yeah.
It's just, yeah, I don't get it. You got the skate right there. It's right there.
But then they just use the skate as an alternate, right?
I know, yeah. But it's so good.
How
just
would you reverse retro the skate?
Well, I'm just saying in general.
Done the blue, white, and green?
Anytime, yeah, they haven't done the white yet.
That's true. I haven't done the white yet. Anytime I see them trying to take on a new jersey logo, though, it just makes me angry because I'm like, you have your best logo just sitting there not being used enough.
I don't have a problem with the Johnny Canuck one. The only thing was with it, it did look like incomplete. I don't have the picture in front of me right now.
Yeah,
but
it looked like just like a mock-up or
something. Well, it looked like there needed to be like one more element like around the collar. It looked just a little bare, a little empty. But the actual elements that were there I liked just needed a little bit more fleshing out.
I just don't know what you would do for the reverse retro this time around. Like, please no gradient jersey.
Well, also,
the Canucks never won in that jersey either.
Are we going to do this every year? Like, teams are going to run out of ideas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We might have to find some new concepts to do.
Well, it's the final year of Adidas, so this might be...
There you go. It might be it. This might be it for the reverse retros.
My vote for reverse retro, I think we talked about this with Don Taylor last week on the People Show. Go for the flying V in blue, white, and green.
I could see that. I'd like that.
That'd be cool.
Because it's got to be like a spin on a retro jersey,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just like go straight skate jersey.
What about the Messier era Orca?
Oh, no.
With those colors.
Not a big fan of this.
No.
Not a big fan of this.
Just to see the reactions.
No, thanks.
I mean, you could associate it with the West Coast Express era as well, of course.
Yeah.
But still.
All right. What we learned, Shooter Tudor Tyler, teams like the Kraken, who are closer to the salary floor than the ceiling, could reap the rewards during the second buyout window by getting decent players plus futures for nothing.
So the thing is, Seattle is
close to
the salary cap ceiling.
Yeah.
That's what I was mentioning. Like, they've used a lot of that salary cap space that they accumulated or that they went into their inaugural season with. And much of it, not on necessarily contracts that I'd be a huge fan of. They only have $1 million in cap space. Now, who knows? There's always different things you can do with LTIR and all that and sending people down. But they're not a team flush with cap space for this upcoming season as things stand.
I wouldn't be surprised if Seattle is better this year. But people talk about how bad the Canucks decor is. I mean... Seattle's defense is not great.
No.
It's ugly. It's maybe the ugliest on paper in the league outside of Arizona.
Yeah, so it's probably...
I mean, Arizona even has Chychrun still, so...
Yeah.
They've at least got that.
What is it? Like, Jamie Oleksiak, Vince Dunn, Adam Larson, and Justin Schultz in your top four?
Yeah. They signed Justin Schultz this year.
Yeah.
Just remembered that.
Yes, they did. And I mean, is he running your top power play? Is Vince Dunn running your top power play? Like,
it's probably got to be Schultz.
It's probably going to be Schultz. So, look, they did some nice things to set themselves up for the future, but for this year, I think still very much a work in progress.
A couple more from the humanoids. Pokey Redick Posse. What we learned, Riccio fronts Italian heritage to hide the fact that he's actually from Buffalo. Biz, Riccio is of Italian descent. Do not franchise a pizza joint in Italy. It really, like, the Domino's in Italy thing really fascinates me. I want to be in that room when they suggested that. Well, like, were they all like just getting high around the table and spitting out ideas? Like, I just,
you know, it's an untapped market in Italy. Pizza.
Pizza. Well, hey, the demand is strong.
You know what I think they'll love in Italy? Our roasted garlic dipping sauce. You know,
they just don't have that.
Our crazy cheesy bread.
Yes.
What would be the equivalent of a company coming into Canada and doing this, like a Japanese company doing poutine or something?
Yeah,
like what?
Basically.
Yeah, but like, is there anyone, I don't know if there is like a Canadian fast food chain anywhere else in the world. I don't know if anyone else, anywhere else in the world is trying to master Canadian food.
Tim,
you know
Hortons.
What I mean? Yeah,
Tim,
but like Tim Hortons is from here.
Yeah, but
you know what I mean?
It's gone to other places.
Well, if it's
Vancouver. Yeah. But like what I'm saying is it can't come to Canada. It's right. From here, right. You know?
If it's Vancouver centric, it'd be another country coming in and doing their take on cannabis.
Well, do we even have a national? Do we? Yeah, right. Do we even have a national dish? Is it poutine?
I can't think of anything else.
Like, what is Canada's?
I mean,
national?
That's the closest thing.
I guess
realistically.
Technically, Tim Hortons is owned by an American company, so
I think,
it is.
Yeah,
a Tim Hortons double is our national dish.
I think we have more like regional dishes than national dishes. You know, like lobster out east, be like salmon here.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, steak on the prairies
such
in Alberta, that kind of thing. Yeah, we have so many different things to offer.
You know, poutine, as I've said many a time, is overrated because it's overdone and it's an oversaturated market.
Poutine.
Yeah.
What would you say the regional dish for Ontario is, Reach?
I wouldn't even know.
Tim Hortons.
Swiss Chalet.
Yeah, Swiss Chalet, baby.
Or chicken dinner from Swiss Chalet, baby.
What about pizza?
I was just about to say pizza.
Whenever I was in Ontario, or especially the Greater Toronto area, it was pizza. Like,
they love
always,
their pizza.
Oh, man, they're everywhere.
Pizza. Nanaimo bars? Do, like, people have Nanaimo bars elsewhere?
I don't know. Like, I love Nanaimo bars, but is that a thing outside of BC?
No. I hide them in Ontario. We
really?
Them Nanaimo bars.
Interesting.
Yeah. I saw a lot of Eastside Mario's in Ontario as well.
Yeah, God.
They're all over the place.
All of Reach's favorites.
Yeah.
Harvey's
Olive Garden,
is the one I'm
Eastside Mario.
Harvey's is the one I'm missing.
Those commercials. Yeah. Hey, bada boom, bada big.
Well, Eastside Mario's is great because they give you the free garlic bread, or the free bread and salad before you order. So if you're a broke musician on tour, you just go to an Eastside Mario's, you eat that, and you leave.
Oh,
you always,
wow.
You guys are hungry by the end of the show because you always get
to
the food.
Is that what they do at the Jardinia Oliva or the Olive Garden?
All right, that's enough, Reach. back to the inbox. What we learned from Ryan, Luke Hughes is better than Quinn. All right, we're firing it up after one World Junior game for the Americans and Quinn's younger brother, Luke Hughes. We've already got fans worried that he's better than Quinn.
Oh, he's bigger.
He is bigger.
I'd pump the brakes on that. I don't know about you.
Yeah, maybe let's slow down a little bit.
One texter in the inbox back to the national dish says maple syrup.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that might be.
That's not a dish. That is a condiment.
Now you could drink it by itself. It's poured into
definitely not a dish.
Poured into a cup. Nice little sip every now and then.
We have another Canadian bacon. It's also not really a dish. Someone said Eggs Benny. Is Eggs Benny Canadian? No way.
I didn't know Eggs Benny was a Canadian exclusive.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've had it other places. Maybe like we invented it. I gotta Google it.
If it is, that's a good entry because Eggs Benny is awesome. But I had no idea.
I'm gonna say we did not invent Eggs Benedict. I love my country, but I'm just.
There's an old Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where a guy claims his dad invented the Cobb salad. This is Larry off.
Eggs Benedict was invented in Lower Manhattan at
Del
Monico's restaurant.
Doesn't sound like Canada.
That sounds about right.
Del Monico. That sounds.
Yeah, that's too bad.
That's
I wish we could
Toronto,
claim it.
Right? Manhattan?
Maybe we should just start claiming it.
Canada's
national dish. Woo. Our greatest treasure.
What we learned, Canada's national dish is a bag of ketchup chips and a bag of milk. A bag of milk is only in Ontario.
Yeah, bag of milk. Don't make that a national thing.
That weirded me out the first time I saw it.
Don't hang that on us.
Milk in a bag? What?
Hey, if you ever want 1.25 liters of milk, it's in the bag. What's wrong with the bags of milk, though?
I went out east for school for university, and I had a close friend from Ontario, and she like tried to explain to me why it's actually more convenient. It's like, she's like, yeah, you know, you go to the store and you get the You get a special jug to put it in, and then you know, everyone has like little scissors in their kitchen to snip it with. It's like you're describing multiple products just to open and pour milk.
Yeah.
We just get it from a carton that you open and pour. How do you think this is more convenient?
Give me that sack of milk.
No, it's so easy. It's like, no, you're describing more steps.
Does he toss me a sack of milk?
Yeah, toss me that sack of milk over there, if you could, please.
You could freeze the bags.
You can, and it keeps it fresher.
Yeah.
And you also don't get the little crusties on the top of the jug like you do with the jugs.
Mm-hmm.
So there are benefits to it.
There are some benefits. What we learned, Kevin on the road, baseball is so boring, players actually keep their phones on them to pass the time.
That was wild. Did you guys see that?
It's a classic.
Yeah.
A classic moment.
Pirates player. Yeah.
Rodolfo Castro.
Rodolfo Castro.
He was expecting an important call.
Kept his phone in his back pocket as he was sliding into third base. Third base umpires just got to be like, hey, you dropped your phone over there.
The end of the clip is hilarious because he just points to it and just, hey, you dropped something.
The worst part is he's like a recent call-up too.
Yeah. get your head in the game, bro.
It's like, oh, that's a tough one.
And the other part of it,
too. What are you doing, playing Angry Birds in between plate appearances?
MLB has strict rules against internet-connected devices on the playing surface. So
yeah.
There's also that other wrinkle where he might actually get suspended because of this.
Oof. Oh. Not the most embarrassing thing to have flown out of a baseball player's pocket, though, because I always loved the, was it Phil or Joe Niekro who had the Emery board fly out of his pocket? You ever remember this clip?
No.
Oh, man, it's a classic, right? The umpire, this is like back in the 80s, and the umpire decides to check the ball and check, you know, make sure there's no substances on his hands or whatever, and he's going to empty his pockets, and he obviously intends to palm the Emery board, but instead it just flies out onto the mound. And it's like, well, yeah, I guess you were shaving the ball with the Emery board.
There's
there,
the evidence.
So good.
It's like when someone with a cork bat breaks their bat, and there's just cork all over the field. Well, I'm not getting out of this one.
Yeah, Sammy Sosa. What? What's Canadian J-Mac and Pomo? What we learned, the Caesar. Not the salad, the drink. Did we create the Caesar drink?
Yes, I believe so. Mm. In Alberta, I think. Calgary?
Okay, that's...
It's got clam juice in it.
I've never been a big Caesar guy.
I'm staying away.
By the way, it was
tomato juice or clam juice?
It was Joe Niekro.
So it's a mixture.
Apologies to Phil. It was Joe Niekro who got busted by the umpires.
Food and beverage worker Walter Schell invented the Caesar in Calgary in 1969. There you go.
Brandon and Coquitlam, the California roll was invented at Tojo's.
That's right, it was.
That's right.
Maybe Vancouver's most famous sushi joint.
The California roll was not invented in California.
No.
What?
Created here.
That's actually... That might be the most influential
Canadian
invention then when you think about it. That might be the one that takes the cake right now.
Cheese on gravy or cheese and gravy on fries doesn't do it for you?
No.
I mean, I love poutine. But I wouldn't call it our national dish.
Good poutine is great. Most poutine is overrated.
Maple syrup popsicle, there you go.
Ugh.
Is that a dish?
It is now.
All right. That's what we learned for today. Appreciate all of your submissions. Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd will be back tomorrow on the program. A lot of World Junior Championship talk. And get you ready for the weekend. Lions and Whitecaps and more to come. NFL preseason continuing. Lots to come. For producers, A-Dog and Laddie, my co-host Jamie Dodd. I'm Dan Riccio. Thanks for listening on Sportsnet 650.